All right, I'm so excited. It's Shark Tank Day here on the Manifestor Mindset, and I have a very special guest with me. I have Mindy Zemrak, who is the casting producer, some exalted title, which I'm probably getting wrong, but most importantly for this audience, she is the person to know if you want to get on Shark Tank. So today we are going to go very deep, not just on what it takes to get on the show, you know, whether Mr. Wonderful owns any other clothes besides a black suit, all the little secrets, but we're also going to talk big picture in a time of COVID when everyone's trying to put deals together, you know, what's it take. So we're taking a lot of questions. I'm going to allow a lot of time. I see Amanda is up there. Hi, Amanda. Stream them in. I got Heather Harder down below, who at any moment, Heather, I might add you to the live stream today because it's Dressed Down Friday. So be ready. And I just want a lot of questions in. We'll take questions, Mindy. But Mindy, welcome.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be doing this. This is my first LinkedIn Live. So it's really cool to see comments and you like this is really cool.
I have a little more stimulation. Are you ready? I brought a mug. I stole this from Sarah Blakely, right? My little shark mug. But more important, I've never worn this before in public, Mindy.
Where did you get that?
I don't even know.
I don't even have that. Where's my Shark Tank sweatshirt's over in the corner, but I have a lot of Shark Tank shirts.
Isn't it so cool? I'm so excited about it. It's Dressed Down Friday on the third floor of Matt Higgins's house. So
I like that. I usually have a ton of like Shark Tank products, but of course they're in my apartment, but not at hand.
So I'm representing the show. So anyway, it's great to have you. For those who don't know, I've been on Shark Tank a couple of times. I'm part of the broader Shark Tank family. I'm also Mindy's favorite guest shark. So I'm just going to say that way she doesn't have to put her on the spot. It's just a fact. Love being part of the Shark Tank family and the Sony family and the ABC family, just like wonderful people. Why don't we start by just explaining what it is you do?
Absolutely. So my exhaustive title is Supervising Casting Producer. It's lengthy, so you can just say head of casting. That's usually what I say. And I'm part of the casting team, and there are 13 of us total on our team. And our team, it's kind of like the front line, I guess, of Shark Tank. So we are the ones that do, in a normal year, we have anywhere from 12 to 15 open calls across the country, and people can apply online. And we go through every single interview at an open call. We see every single person out there, and then we go through every single online submission. And then pass them on ultimately to our producers who make the first decision of, are we interested or no, we're not. There's three casting producers, myself, a casting manager, four associates, a casting assistant, and then three editors all on the casting team. So we're kind of just we start the earliest. Some of us start in January. The full team starts late February, and we're on until end of July, beginning of August. Because we have a lot of stuff to get through, because basically our casting season wraps in July, August, and then we kind of take online submissions from August to February, and they all get backed up. So we have a lot of stuff to go through, but we go through every single one and try and find out what makes a person's business or product different and unique. And we get to know about the entrepreneur, because as you know, every single person has a backstory, which probably 99% of the time leads them to why they're doing what they're doing in terms of pitching this business or product. So it's up to our team to kind of pull those story points and little notes and nuggets out to then turn around and pitch it to the producers to say, hey, this is what makes, you know, Mindy Zemrak different than, you know, anyone else out there. And this is her story, but in a very short amount of time.
So let's break this down from the journey of the entrepreneur and like what it takes to get on set, and then we'll kind of go into the Shark Tank experience once you get that far, right? But I'm always fascinated the times I've been on the show thinking about, wow, what did it take for that person to get here? And what kind of personality profile does it take to go through that kind of work to get there? So like the first part of the process to even become one of the 40,000 who goes to these open casting calls, what do you actually technically have to do to get in front of Mindy and your team?
So there's really kind of three ways people can get in our mix. They can apply online, which this season, due to COVID and the pandemic, all of our open calls were canceled. We only finished two in January. So everything moved to online this year. And they fill out a very brief form, basically talking about their company or product, what stage they're in, if they're an idea or research and development or prototype or shipping and whatnot, if they're doing any sort of, you know, crowdfunding, with a little description and a website link, and then we take a look at that. The other way is a couple people on my team also do outreach. So we just read the internet all day, every day, and go down rabbit holes, and we find companies that we cold email and just say, hey, saw an article or saw your, you know, crowdfunding. Where are you at? Are you interested? We can talk about Shark Tank. Are you looking for investment? Because the number one thing is, you know, being in that chair is we actually want people who need an investment not to just come in and use us for airtime, because that takes away from people who actually need it. So it's pretty straightforward in terms of the first step is you just got to apply. You just got to type it in, hit that send button, right, and then you wait for a long time.
Right? You got to be in it to win it. So you just got to take that first step and just, yes, you know, hit send, right? And you show up at the Javits Center or wherever you are around the country.
We were at the Javits Center last year, yeah. Right. What was our biggest open call? I think we had over 800 people that day in one day.
Right.
And so, yeah, if you go to an open call, which again, this year they were all canceled, but you just give us your 1 to 2 minute pitch, and then we ask a couple follow-up questions. We're kind of like the guppies, if you will. We're not sharks. We're guppies.
They're like gentle, though. You're right. You give a totally probably a false impression of what it's going to be like to, hi, you're so nurturing and nice. And it's like,
I don't give a false impression. Everyone sees how y'all are.
We're on TV. I forgot. Oh, I'm nice. I'm very nice. You know, I'm
we always
I can be sharky.
You absolutely can. We always joke, and I always say to entrepreneurs at an open call, is that none of us have money to invest in you. So it's the easiest part of the entire process, because we want people to be comfortable. And if they want to read notes versus memorizing their pitch, that's fine. Because by the time they get to you and you know, in the tank, they theoretically should have it memorized. And if they don't, that's okay, because we've seen it happen. People forget their lines. And it's more of just having a conversation. Just tell me what makes you different and unique. So it's very laid back. And then if you make it through the different levels of our process, it gets harder and there's more work involved. Like everyone there's a big misconception that people don't realize how much work is involved to actually get from the time they apply to actually ending up on the show. It's a lot.
Right. I mean, that's such an extensive amount of diligence that a lot of times when you're a small business, the good part about the process is it forced people to go into it. Like, what's four-wall profit margin? You know, there are things that you probably haven't done, and your acquisition costs. It does force you to sort of go through those as part of that big, you know, pile of paperwork you have to fill out, right?
Our application itself is about 37 pages. And then there's background checks and patent checks if you make it to that point. And even entrepreneurs who don't make it into the tank all the way through, the next year will apply. And they've literally said to us, you made me take a good hard look at my company, and I thought I was ready last season, but I wasn't. I'm so much in a better place now to do this. And ultimately, even if they don't make it to that stage, just when they go to an open call, talking to other entrepreneurs, they're networking, they're making connections. So even if it's early in the process or late, I feel personally, based on what I've heard, is that everyone can kind of learn something about either connections in business or their business itself just from being in our process, whether it's a little bit or for a long time. So I think that's pretty valuable.
Actually, you said something really great, because this is, I think, a general principle for everybody out there who's faced rejection in the past. On last season just ended, one of the deals that I did with a company called Tailgate & Go, which I wasn't going to do, but I decided to snatch it from the jaws of Kevin O'Leary and save this poor family from doing a deal with him. Yes. But they had applied the year before and were rejected. And I hadn't heard that fact. I know that fact pattern happens sometimes, but what's pretty amazing is they apply again, they fight to get on the show, the business is more established, they do a deal with me, which is like amazing, of course. And then within 3 months, we're standing at the Super Bowl in Miami doing a deal with the National Football League. 3 months later, all because they had the guts and the gumption and the stick-to-itiveness to get back on the show again. So anybody out there who's been rejected by anybody, Mindy, or any part of this process, you know, you should try again, because you can get back on again, right? So in your experience, if you had to break it down, let's just take it to the point where you actually get the green light that you're going to be one of the 150 who's going to get on. Are there certain attributes you see in entrepreneurs? And then are there certain attributes you see in the businesses that get through?
That's a great question. We always get asked, what do I have to do to stand out? What is it? And I say this over and over, but it's the truth. We want to know if getting on Shark Tank is 50% about your business or your product, and then 50% about you and your backstory. Because getting on Shark Tank, it's not just, do you have the coolest invention or the coolest thing since sliced bread? That's great, but you have a story. We want to hear your story, because all of you are self-made and all the entrepreneurs who are applying are trying to get hopefully to where you are or to some sort of level that is beyond where they currently are. And that journey is really, it resonates with you. It resonates with all the viewers and everything. So it's our job to kind of see, okay, if you have a great personality, that's great, but that's not what is going to make or break you getting on this show. Your business or product, you should be able to come in and really reiterate kind of in a bullet point list of, here's what makes me different than all the other companies that are doing something similar. I always say this, and it's just my way of doing things, I guess, is I always say, hey, my name's Mindy and I make the best cupcakes ever. And my cupcakes are made of unicorn tears. But it's also about how you sell it. If you're just kind of pitching us, and this is in person or even in front of you guys, like, hey, my name's Mindy and I make really good cupcakes, probably not going to get excited. But if you're like, sharks, I make the best cupcakes ever, and here's why. Like, then you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I need to try these cupcakes. So energy and passion goes a long way. Knowing what makes your business different and unique from any other competitors. And then also, what's at stake? What have you given to get to this point? If it's you're a single dad or a single mom, you've had to deplete your 401k, your kids' college fund, move out, whatever it is, do not lie about those things, because we do due diligence, but those things make you who you are and where you are currently. And so those are kind of the things that we look for, those nuggets of what makes you different, do you have the passion, and what's your story? Because that is kind of like the perfect combination of, okay, we're interested, now let's move it forward. So it doesn't rely on products.
I mean, that's good advice that applies to anybody in any kind of business who's pitching, right? You just got to own your narrative, right? Just own it, right? No one else is going to own it for you, right? All right, so you've made it. You went through this, you know, crazy process, the improbable dream from 40,000 to the 150 or so you have throughout the course of the year. Let's take it down to the day of. Right. Okay. So you have, let's sort of tell a few little facts about Shark Tank, right? The day starts shooting around 9 o'clock in the morning, right? And it goes till 7 o'clock at night, right? And there's about 10 pitches over the course of the day. You know, what's it like from the perspective of an entrepreneur? Like, take us behind the scenes.
Oh man, I'm sure that they're all very nervous. So entrepreneurs get up much earlier. They don't just roll up at 9 a.m. They had like our first pitch gets around 9 a.m. But for the entrepreneurs, you know, we bring them in early because we bring them in from their hotel, and then they'll sit in a trailer or a dressing room. They'll get some hair and makeup touches, and then they just sit and wait. And a lot of them just kind of do things to keep themselves busy, or they rehearse. Every person's different. So you'll go to some of their trailers, their dressing rooms, and they're just over and over and over, just like that rehearsal of that pitch is just nonstop. Right. A great example actually was Cousins Maine Lobster, Jim and Saban. I went into their trailer right before their pitch, like an hour before, and they were sitting there, and they had, I'm not making this up, they had a stack of like flashcards this big, and they were just quizzing each other on every single question they had seen any of the sharks ask in any episode. And they were just nailing it over and over. So a lot of people are just rehearsing. If they have kids with them or whatnot, they're usually, the kids have to go to school because we have to school them while they're with us. And then when it's time to maybe move into stage, they're sitting on stage backstage, kind of like in a dark room, like that they're kind of closed off from everyone.
As you're talking, I have never seen, right? I mean, because when you're a shark on the set,
you are on your side.
Right. So you're sitting in some room somewhere. Right.
We have a whole stage of all of their props and all of their setups and everything. And then they just kind of sit and wait. We get them mic'd up, and then they sit. It's a lot of hurry up and wait. It's a lot of sitting around and waiting, and then we bring them into to the set, and then obviously art department is getting ready with the pitch and the setup. They are getting last looks from hair and makeup to make sure they're not too shiny and everything. And again, some people are backstage doing push-ups. They're praying. Some people are hugging. Some people are chanting, like whatever it is to get themselves amped up. And then the stage manager puts them in the place on that carpet in front of those doors. And y'all are either just dancing or getting craft service or getting hair and makeup touches, just, you know, doing your thing.
Not the first time. Well, I mean, to pause you there, so to take it from the handoff, yeah. Right, you're standing behind the doors. First time I went on Shark Tank, and you know, it's like you think it's going to be all nice and there'll be some kind of orientation. Kindly, they put me next to Lori Grenier, who seems to just sort of be the onboarding. You know, she's the gentle voice, right? But I remember going the first time I went on, thinking like all of a sudden they start doing the countdown right in front of you and the lights are on, saying, wait a second. There's no prep. There's no orientation. The thing I found most fascinating, because again, you don't really know enough. It's all like relatively shrouded in mystery. Then the doors open and you actually have no information about what's to walk through that door. So as a shark, that was the most fascinating part. And then the second part is how much the experience on set mirrors what you see on TV. Only probably more aggressive, right? I mean, when I was sitting there starting, all of a sudden everyone's like talking over each other instantly. I'm like, how am I going to get a word in from over here in the corner? So I remember my first thought, the first 2 minutes sitting on set thinking, how hard is this for an entrepreneur? Like what this person is going through is unbelievable, because I've been around the block a bit, done some hard things, and I'm sitting here kind of overwhelmed by this experience and nervous. I can't imagine when somebody's got it all on the line, right? And are you back there kind of like giving little pep talks and just breathe deep, meditate, be in the moment?
Not me. If it's someone that I've spoken to a couple times, I'll kind of go back and give them like a high five and I'll be like, you'll kill it, whatnot. But the producers who are kind of their coach, or, you know, the ones that kind of handling them there with them. And then Max, one of our executive producers, is back there kind of giving them a last minute prep talk and everything. But then once we place them, I sit backstage with the producers and watch on all the cameras of your reaction and the entrepreneur's reaction. Because like you said, we don't tell the sharks anything, nothing. We tell them maybe their, I think their first name right as they're walking in, so you guys can write it down. But we keep everything very hush hush so that we can get those genuine reactions of, I mean, Barbara painting a naked man, or a camel walking down the hallway, or goats. Like, you just never know. So we want to catch it all on camera and everything. So hi, Maury. I saw you, by the way.
Yeah, was Maury in there?
Maury's in there. Hi, Maury.
No, I think that part is what makes the show so magical, is that the sharks don't really know. And what is interesting too, people always ask, oh, but how much of it is reality TV or scripted? When your own money is at stake, like, I'm sorry, a different primal emotion takes over. And right, number one, and I guess we're all sort of competitive personalities, because you're assessing, at least going through my head watching, am I interested in this deal, right? That's the number one. And you have to be respectful, of course. And like, even if sometimes you're sitting on TV, be like, I would never do that. When you're on the set, somebody worked really hard to get there. You have to be respectful and you have to keep your head in the game, even if you think you don't do it. So one, I think you're assessing whether or not you're actually interested. Then something goes off and say, you know, I might be interested. I need some more information, but I also need to calculate whether or not this entrepreneur is worth backing. And I only have about 40 minutes to do it. So what are the things I'm going to look for? And I know what I look for. And then three, once you've pivoted over, oh, I am interested. Now, how am I going to beat my fellow sharks mercilessly, you know, or who am I going to partner with? It's all like Survivor happening in a, you know, 40 minute period is pretty amazing, but every bit of it is authentic. You know,
I can't imagine. I personally have been in a couple interviews kind of Shark Tank style, but this was for a job a couple years ago, but it was with 13 or 14 people on a panel. And they just hit me with questions. It was like, you guys, just question after question after question. And I left that interview and I had sweat down my back because I was like, this is insane. So I imagine it's similar for the entrepreneurs. And what's kind of funny, but also true, is that every time an entrepreneur walks off stage, give them like 30 minutes, an hour to digest, to go back and start picking their stuff up. And you go visit them and they're like, was that 20 minutes? They think it's the shortest amount of time. And a lot of them black out. They're like, I have no idea what happened. And I'm like, you were in there for an hour and a half. And they were like, what? Like, they black out. And it's like, they have some remembrance of little things. Like, yeah, I made a deal. No, I didn't. But for the most part, they just go blank. And I'm like, wow. Like, so I can understand. But I mean, when you go over each other, that's a lot.
Right. No, by the end of, I mean, if the day finishes it up at 7 o'clock, like, you're mentally exhausted. And I used to always think, sitting at home, you know, I'd like to pride myself as having like a mental calculator. I'm the guy in the meeting who can calculate everything on that show. It's like, oh, I know why you have a notepad, because your mind is like, you're evaluating, but you're also persuading, and then you're competing while also trying not to do a stupid deal, but trying to do the best deal too. You know, there's a lot going on. Do you feel like you could tell who's probably going to get a deal, and, you know, and are usually right or wrong?
I have no idea who will ever get a deal, because even if I think, oh, this person will get a deal, they sometimes don't, because it's like you said, it's your money. It's not the studios, it's yours. So you guys have a different way of thinking versus maybe someone like me versus just a viewer of the show. And which is great because you guys know what you're doing. And I'm not a business person. I don't know half the stuff you guys do, but there are times when I'll sit back and I'll be like, I'll be shocked if this gets a deal. And then it does. Like, I want to draw a cat for you. Mark Cuban invested in that years ago, and it was a man drawing cat stick figures on cards and mailing them out. And Cuban did a deal with them. And he said, for every, it was something like for every 1,000 cards, or if someone paid $1,000 for a card, Mark would actually like make the card, draw the stick figure card. And he got a deal. And I never thought that would get a deal.
Yeah, Mark Cuban did a deal with some pet food one when I was on. I was like, I don't understand it. But, you know, to each his own, right? No, it's a great point.
We're interested in. Like, we're still learning. I've been on the show since season one, and now we're going into season 12. And it's like, wait, you know, Damon represents Grumpy Cat? I didn't know that. Like, you just never know. There's so many.
So I'm going to ask you a few more questions. Hey, just keep the questions coming. I see a lot of great questions. We'll turn to them in a couple of minutes. I'm just going to ask Mindy a couple more, and then I'll turn it over to everyone else. So top three Shark Tank pitches. You could pick one of them. It doesn't have to be your favorite because I don't want to put you in that spot. But, you know, for whatever reason, what was one of the best moments on the show for you?
Hands down, I think Cupboard Pro.
Yeah.
As you invested in that deal, and you're obviously very close with the young family and everything, but I actually reached out to Kaylee a month to the day after her father's funeral. Mm. And then they filmed Father's Day weekend, which was very kind of fitting when all was said and done. But to
we tell everybody about the Kaylee, in case you haven't seen the episode, want to tell them a little bit about the kids? The
Pro are, I want to call them kids. They're not, but they're younger.
Right,
they're
younger. You'll call them kids forever, I guess. But yeah.
Exactly. But Kaylee and Christian and Kira came in and they pitched on behalf basically of their father and their mother. Their mother passed away years ago of breast cancer. I think it was breast cancer. And then their father, who was a 9/11 first responder, firefighter, passed away from 9/11 complicated issues. And he had been working and developing on this cutting board that is beautifully made, and it has like a ring around the corner to catch juices and this insert of a cup so it catches everything while you're cutting. And just to see these kids go through everything that they've been through and to come in and to pitch on behalf of their family, you could hear a pin drop in that studio, because I know you obviously that's a story very close to you, and Damon as well, Barbara, because you all live in New York. And you guys were there. It obviously hits home with just our country, and they got a deal with all five of you, which was truly incredible. And I know that they are doing amazing things now, and they were able to give back to their father's fire department and everything. But it was one of the most emotional pitches I've ever seen, just because these kids are so amazing, and their parents, I know, are so proud of them, because they're just the most genuine, humble, giving kids I've ever met. And they were just the sweetest people ever. I saw Kaylee last year in New York right before our open call, and she was just like, I'm so happy and thank you so much. And I was like, this was all you guys. Like, you know, we just.
Yeah, that was really, I mean, from a perspective of a shark, and that was the first time I'd been on the show. And I had been, you know, I had helped oversee the rebuilding of the Trade Center for 2 years of my life. So there's a lot of just buried trauma, things I don't return to. And then I'm sitting there and they walk through, and at first they're telling the story about losing their mother, which is painful enough. And then they tell a story about their father, and you think, I cannot believe these three kids are standing here. And we all, no one could speak. I mean, it was almost like it was going to be a failed pitch because I couldn't talk. I mean, and we all had to compose ourselves. But what amazing kids. And also the part that's really amazing, just about the power of the show to fulfill dreams. Like, their dad clearly knew that, you know, Kaylee in particular had it in her to be an entrepreneur, and he would take her to trade shows and take her with her all the time.
Together too.
Right. Right. So like, and his tooling had rusted while he was going through treatment. So it just felt like this was almost like completing a dream that was very intentioned about putting his kids up in a position to be entrepreneurs. And this wasn't a case of philanthropy at the same time. I mean, there's a philanthropic component to it, but it's a great product that probably wouldn't have gotten anywhere because they didn't have the wherewithal. And they're only a couple of months after their father had passed away. So it's just kind of everything that's always been, to me, it was magical about Shark Tank came together at that one moment of time for that magical 50 minutes when everyone came together and just decided to unite behind the deal. Of course, the next day, everyone's competing all over again, but we worked together. We stay very close to those kids. I took Kaylee with me to Boston to just spend the day with them. We all talk to them all the time. All right, so let me switch topics. What's the strangest one? I have mine, but what is the most, you know, bizarre one that ever got on?
I think I have to throw it back to the pilot episode.
I was going to do that one too. I hope you don't take mine. I think you're about to, but go ahead.
So how about this? I'll switch it. You can take that one. Mm-hmm. Because I know exactly the one you're going to say. So I would say it's not bizarre, but more of just shock value. One was when we actually shocked the sharks. It was like the bracelet. Or not bracelet, it was something to do with like squirrels or zapping them or whatever, and we zapped the sharks, which was really funny. But then the other one that really kind of made my jaw drop was Pavlok, which was basically, it was like the wearable tech you could wear that would help you break your habits, like the Pavlov system with dogs and whatnot. So you could bite your nails and everything, and it would zap you. And the entrepreneur came in and he pitched, and the only offer he got was from Mr. Wonderful. And the entrepreneur looked at Kevin and said, I would do a deal with anyone here but you. And Kevin said, F off, F you, get the F out. And he's never said that to anyone. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I've never seen that ever again since. Kevin was pissed.
And Amanda just jumped in with my favorite one. So for those of you who haven't seen it, that is correct, Amanda. The Bluetooth implant. I love this episode. A guy comes on, he's completely deadpanned and says, I have a great idea. We all want to use phones, Bluetooth, and we're going to implant it in your ear. And the best part is the way you recharge it was like a Q-tip that would go into your brain, you know, every night and recharge your... Although there are days during post-COVID that I want that, to be honest. You know, there's a market somewhere for everybody. I went back and watched that pitch not that long ago. I could use that because I spend all day long. I can't stand Zoom calls. I'm sick of it. And I walk around with my Bluetooth, you know. All right, so Mindy, let's take some questions. You have a ton of people out there asking a lot of great questions. Heather's going to go ahead and throw some up right now. Let's see what we got. And we'll take some questions from folks. But, here we go.
Great.
Can you see it or do you want me to read it?
Oh, I can see it.
Okay.
Does anyone know that those selected? So this is a lot of questions. Whoa,
I got to unpack. I think we can sort of parenthetically, whatever happened to them, are some more selected? Do some just go on the show just to get the exposure, et cetera?
So I know that, you know, it's 150 that are potentially filmed and then even less than that air. Usually we have anywhere from 22 to 24 episodes a year. So you're looking at 88 to 100 potentially air. For those that close or don't close, I'm out of that because it's truly between the shark and the entrepreneur to close that deal. You guys, I believe, have your own system of diligence to go through with the entrepreneur. So I'm not privy to what closes and what doesn't because my job's done once they get on the show or, you know, or through our system. So
yeah, I mean, I can take that a bit.
It's between you guys.
I think it's like anything in life, you know, they always say, well, what, you know, does everything close? Well, clearly not, because in life, not everything closes. Right. And that's the point about the show being really authentic. And it doesn't close for a variety of reasons. Like the numbers aren't what you think they are. Or, right. You know, or there's, you know, somebody wants some commitment that, you know, that isn't being fulfilled, or they change their mind. Like anything happens. I will find, though, that everyone goes into it with the spirit of like, you don't go through all that aggravation to not want to try to make a deal happen. So that's one. Two, just because you get rejected on Shark Tank, just like in life, doesn't mean that the people sitting on their stage aren't incredibly wrong and you're motivated to prove them. I remember when I won, I love talking to, Supergirl out there. Who I like talking to, they went on the show, they weren't rejected. You know, basically Kevin O'Leary said they were gonna go out of business, they just didn't know it. And I made the point, and this is good advice for everybody out there, when somebody's been doing something for 10 years, they're likely to do it for 11 or 12 or 13, right? Objects in motion tend to stay in motion, and the same goes true for a business. So I remember when they come on set and we were telling them, you're gonna go out of business, and I was like, I don't think so. So anyway, pleased to report, fast forward, they're doing great. So just because you get rejected by people who only have an hour with you, just like they do on Shark Tank, doesn't mean they have all the answers. So you can't let those rejections sort of knock you down. So So I'll go to the next one right here. What are the top three qualities you look for in a startup? I'll talk about in the Shark Tank space, right? For me, I think if you're going to be on the show and you're going to be in front of a, you know, all of America and to some extent the world, I want something that is a product that everybody can relate to. The best ones are the ones when you could turn around and just buy it right now. So I think obviously e-commerce, you know, does great, right? And I want to know that the entrepreneur has the ability to go the distance. I have never in my life seen a situation where you have a great idea or a great product that can overcome an entrepreneur that doesn't have what it takes. So I always say I'm looking for these little tells over the course of, like, it's similar to me doing a deal generally, but only have 40 or 50 minutes while you're on set. I'm looking for little tells, right? Signals. Do you have integrity, right? Are you, you know, bullshitting the numbers or are you being honest? Do you have conviction? So as soon as somebody challenges what you're saying, you decide to pivot instantly, like, oh, Mark, okay, you want me to be in Target? I'll do in Target, even though I thought Target was terrible until I came on the set. Like, I'm looking for a degree of conviction. Also, I want to make sure that the business has significant traction, that you're only trying to do a deal with me to try to bring three elements of strategic value. So, because I don't want another job and I don't want to go on a rescue mission, right? So I'm looking for something that I think I could amplify, right? But that I'm not necessarily the only way this business is going to make it. Because then you're asking me to devote my life to it. So I think one of the common mistakes people make when they're pitching is they're afraid to say, look, I only need you for these three things, right? And I'm going to look for that. And I think even on the show sometimes, it's like, don't be afraid to say how the person you're pitching is going to bring value, but also give them the assurance that you're going to be fine otherwise without them, right? So I know I put a lot in that statement, but.
No, I think that's all very valuable and good for people.
Right. All right, let's do another one. Heather, what do you got up next? No, I'll let you take that, Mindy.
Following passion more important than trying to pursue what's valuable to our society as an entrepreneur. That, wow. I don't really know how to answer that. I think you just got to do what is best for you. In terms of follow your passion, like, passion does change it. It does change. I think in terms of pitching for Shark Tank, we need to see your passion. Because, again, if you're not excited and you truly don't believe in what it is that you're pitching, then the producers aren't going to get excited, and 5 to 7 million people on TV may not get excited, and the sharks may not get excited. So when we say, you know, show your passion, not follow your passion, it's a little different. That's what we mean. In terms of this question, I would say everyone's different. If someone has a passion and they want to pursue it, then they go for it. You know, I don't think that we can dictate what's valuable to our society as an entrepreneur. If you believe in something, then go for it.
Yeah. And I think, let's talk about what passion is. Why is passion important, to break it down? I mean, passion, number one, is contagious. So if you're passionate, you're going to be able to enlist employees and shareholders, investors and vendors to care about what you care about, right? When somebody's passionate, like, this is amazing, it's contagious too. You need passion to sustain you through the dark times. So I tend to only generally invest in founder-led businesses because I want to back humans, right? I don't want to back a stock symbol. I don't want to back a nebulous corporation. I want to back a person because I know they're going to come with that passion that's going to sustain them through those dark times. So now, if something is a passion project, that's called a hobby, right? So, you know, fundamentally, if you, the hobbies are good and passion projects are also good. We're all human. We need to nourish the soul. But you got to ask yourself, why am I doing what I'm doing? It's about living an intentional life. Am I doing this because I really am just doubling down on my hobby and calling it a business? Or is this something that's actually going to feed my family? So I do think it's an important self-scouting. Some of the biggest mistakes I've made is when I become enamored with the creativity of an idea of mine, and reality was a feature that I tried to turn into a business. Or worse, it was a hobby that I tried to turn into a business. So I would say passion is fuel, but passion can't be the premise, because then it's not a business. All right, another one. Is it true that all entrepreneurs must sit down with a therapist after completing their pitch? I don't know. I don't know, Mindy. I know I sit down with a therapist after I go through that experience and sort of get smacked around on set by everybody. But what do you?
I should probably sit down with a therapist after every open call. We sit through. Hold on a second. My dog just. Oh boy. I have a puppy, and he's just pulling.
Your puppy. Can we see the puppy? Can you move the camera?
Do you want to see him?
Yeah, of course we want to see. You can't just mention a puppy, not show the puppy.
Come here. Oh goodness, this is Dudley.
He's not quite a puppy. He's a little bigger than a puppy. He's outgrown the puppy.
One next week, so he's very much. He's still a puppy, but he's a rescue.
So cute.
On Instagram.
So cute. Well, hello. You can stay with us.
But to answer that question, I mean, yeah, technically they do. Yep. That's all I can really say about that.
Okay. All right. Good. No, there, Nate, you heard it here first on the Manifestor Minds. I didn't even know that. All right. Let's put this one. No, not that one. I want to put this one. All right. So I don't even know how important is props for your display. Like, I don't know how that process works and how much you get involved in curating it.
So I will say, you know, props is more of a discussion between an entrepreneur and their producing team, in terms of just demonstrating whatever it is. So you don't have to have props. If you're a food company, you're probably not going to have props, but we need to be able to serve the sharks hot food or cold food or whatever. So when it comes to food companies, we backstage, the producers are timing everything out so that when we know, okay, if there's, you know, the pitch that's on right now is wrapping up, then we have to be able to tell our entrepreneur who's in the kitchen, okay, you got 15 minutes, maybe you have 30 minutes, so they can start timing everything out. So props is more of just a demonstration of, we want to be able to pass out samples to the shark so that you guys can taste it, play with it, demo it, try it out and everything. So food is very important.
But I think from my perspective of the shark, I think props are really important in telling this story. Like you have a one moment to grab everybody's attention. And again, going back to subtle cues, we're all humans, we're emotional beings, whether we admit it or not. So you're looking for little things. And the way you tell that cohesive story, and it's compelling and gripping, I will say that the props and the presentations way over index, right? So whether an idea is a good idea or a bad idea, pretty much every idea is presented in a very compelling way, which is also confusing, right? Because you're evaluating, you're like, and everything looks so good, sounds so good, you know? So here's one. Do investments go to the working capital of the company or to the owner as payment for shares? That's a great question. Well, me as an early investor, if I'm doing a deal on Shark Tank or anywhere else in the world, if money's going out of the company, I'm very unhappy. So like that the notion that an owner would take chips off the table that early, like, never happens early stage. It might happen later on in a $1 billion company. So the short answer to that is it's going all into the company as, you know, growth capital, diluting it. The investor will take whatever they take, 10%, 20%, but that's a good question. Let's do another one. Heather, unless you got one.
I think these are so cool.
Are they great? This is so fun.
Really cool.
Having seen every episode of Shark Tank multiple times, one of the main red flags for the sharks when entrepreneurs talk about the size of the market and suggest that even 1% of 1% of the market results in millions of sales. What are other common red flags you have seen? That's a good one. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
I'll go first. Okay, just from a casting perspective, this is great, Amanda, because when we go to an open call, all the time we get pitched. And I tell entrepreneurs, they always say, if I can get 1% of a $20 billion market, and I'm like, okay, take that out of your pitch entirely, because we don't care. We all know how big the industries are. You all know how big the industries are. It infuriates some of the sharks more than others, I think, to talk about projections and how big and everything. Like, Cuban hates it. I think O'Leary hates it. I'm not sure where you stand. But from a casting perspective, we do not want anyone to tell us how big you a market is, and if you can get 1% of this, because just to be honest, chances are you're not going to get that amount in this moment, maybe in 2-3 years, but not right now. And we ask that question of, what are your current sales? What are you projecting by the end of the year, to know, okay, do they have their head on straight, kind of like, are they sure that they have a real legit logical thinking about this, or are they, you know, kind of just big thinking and not really honing in on what am I actually really going to get? Because we know once it gets to you guys, it's a different ball game, and y'all might shred them a little more than we will about that market share size.
That's interesting. It's interesting what provokes anybody. I could care less if somebody goes ahead. I actually have no problem if somebody brings up the total addressable market. And here's why. One, I may not know. Sometimes what infuriates me is when the other sharks act like they have a PhD, you know, and they understand the alchemy of a supplement. So that's one that makes me nuts. But also, I don't know the total addressable market of every single thing that's been pitched. So if, say, for instance, Pooch Selfie was coming on the show and they told me, it turns out that selfie products for dogs, you know, is a $700 million market. And, you know, if we could get e-com rocking, I could turn this into 10 million. Like, that is interesting. So I don't really, those don't provoke me. I think what provokes me is when somebody doesn't know their numbers. That's saying it's obvious. Everyone says the same thing like that. What bothers me probably, like, more than anything, is when people capitulate instantly in an attempt to get a deal done, because it signals to me either you lack authenticity or integrity, or you're just going to be malleable and you're not going to have what it takes to withstand different kinds of pressures. So when somebody immediately, one of the other sharks, like, you really should be doing something completely contrary to your entire business. That's a great idea. I didn't think about that the 6 years I've been waiting to get on the set, but now I've become like, so to me, it's like a kind of a non-starter, but I don't know. I have like 10 of those, but the things that provoke me are probably different than the things that provoke. I'm less valuation focused, and I am much more focused on owning a significant enough stake that it gets me out of bed, because like we all have limited time. And, you know, one of the things I've learned, this is something for everybody out there, I've learned this the hard way. Small opportunities and big opportunities take almost the same amount of energy, which is ironic because you would think they would scale proportionally, right? If a $1 million company has the same kind of problems as a $100 million one, because problems are all about people, right? People, problems start and end with people. So I'm looking for things that are scalable and available and potentially significant enough that I can either own enough of the business, but also that it could be a big enough business, because I want to be honest with the person I'm dealing with. Like, if I have to deal with a massive billion-dollar entity, you know, and I don't own enough of this, that's probably not going to get my attention, right? That's the rule. But that's a great question. I saw another one. Do you have to go yet, Mindy? How long do I have you for? I mean, this is awesome. Wait, hold on a second. Oh, do you have any spinoffs? Yeah, I want my own show, Mindy. How do we make this happen? Is Holly or Clay, are you watching? We need our own show, like After the Tank or When Everything's in the Tank. I don't know.
We actually did everything. A spinoff show called Beyond the Tank for 2 years, where it kind of took a closer look at entrepreneurs after they came out of the tank, whether they got a deal or whether or not. It didn't go a third season, but I don't know of any other spinoff shows at the moment.
But like, here's a good question. I like just to tag on the last one, like, you know, should we be doing more updates or flashbacks? I think people do want to know what happens. And I guess we do an update. How often are the updates? I'm blanking.
Every episode
has one update, right? So I always think actually we could probably do a better job using our social media to provide updates outside of the show, since you only have limited inventory. Like, those should live somewhere where you can find out what happened to the cochlear implant guy, because I still want to know that. Like, and I'm sure fans of the show would love to know that. It doesn't always have to just be, you know, on the show. But that's a great question. What else do we got, Heather? If you got more, keep them coming. I receive a lot of advice from friends, family, and people I just meet about my business. And I think to myself, I thought about the idea 8 months ago, and there are reasons I did or did not move forward with it. Haha. If the sharks provide advice on your business and you know it's not going to work out or you don't want to do it, what's a good way to respond? I think first by saying, go to hell. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. That always resonates with me, because sometimes I sit there and think, I listen to one of the sharks, I'm like, oh, like, get back to my PhD point. Like, I didn't realize you instantly became an expert. So I love it when somebody says, with all due respect, I thought about that and it doesn't make sense. And here's why, because it shows, again, I look for conviction, right? And I look for integrity. And to me, that tells me I'm not just going to tell you what you want to hear to get what I want done. Now, also, if you handle it in a way that's not diplomatic, that also tells me that you're going to be probably pain in the ass to deal with, or you don't know how to handle tough feedback. And that to me also says you're not going to be a good manager, or you're not going to be dealing with vendors well. So to me, it's an opportunity to show what you're about. But the best way to deal is just level with them, and don't compromise your principles or your values or your direction to just get a deal done, because it'll fall apart anyway.
Oh, it'll go away real fast.
Yeah. That's a good question. These are so good. All right, Mindy, you got this.
Any good resources to get better at pitching with nerves, from Alyssa? Well, I think this is a great question. I would say just practice in front of people. Like, just, I know it sounds maybe very juvenile, like when we were in elementary school and junior high, being like, I got to practice this. But I would say, you know, just practice around people that don't know you as well, because they can give you a little more insight. I used to be very shy, if anyone can believe that who knows me, because I'm very kind of outspoken and I have to be in this position. And I never in my life ever thought I would be addressing hundreds of people at an open call, but here I am. So you just kind of have to do it and believe in yourself. And for me, a lot of times it's like, I don't know how to do this, but I'm just going to do it and figure it out, and I'll learn from mistakes as I go. That's kind of the way I roll.
Well, I love that. I feel very strongly about this, that you have one job throughout your life that you cannot outsource and you cannot delegate, and it's to love yourself. and to believe in yourself. Every day you get up in the morning, you have that one job and it's nobody else's job to do it. So you have to cultivate that throughout the course of your life. And to get very tactical about it, there's a great TED talk. Somebody out there wants to help me out can explain it. By I think a behavioral scientist that talks about the power of opening up your arms and creating that large gesture about what that does to your psychology, your physiology, that it makes all the difference in the world. So when you're about to give a pitch, just go into the bathroom by yourself. I do this, right? And just open your eyes and occupy space, your arms rather. And just something washes over you. Try it at home right now, right now, because you're not in the office and no one's going to look at you, right? Doesn't it feel good? Like you opened up, occupied space. We spend so much time like this, shoulder over, like you occupy space and you feel like you just can go after it, Mindy. So
go after anything.
So look up the TED talk on body posture as it relates to confidence. And it's pretty amazing. Shark Tank should take over the SBA. I completely agree. I don't know what to tell you about that. I think that would be a damn great idea, or the entire United States government at the moment. I think anybody could do a better job at the moment than what's going on. What does the process look like after the deal is done and then you meet with your new team? That's it. You want to take that from a mechanical standpoint? I actually don't know what immediately happens.
So what happens after they're done pitching, say they do a deal with you, they shake your hands, they say, great, thanks so much. They take the tank, go back. Yeah. And then we do a post interview with them really quick. So that's kind of like the exit interview that you see after they get out of the tank and they're saying like maybe 10, 15 seconds, like, hey, you know, I never thought this or whatever. I did a deal. Can't believe it. And then we do that for a little bit and then they go back to their trailer. And then I think usually someone from a representative from one of your teams comes over and just kind of says, hey, we'll be in touch in the next couple of weeks or whatnot. And then we fly them home either that night or the next day. And then they wait to hear from you. And then you do what you do.
Then we do what we do. And then we get on the phone and your own team does its own diligence, right? So there's always a confirmation process. The diligence is a certain form of diligence that kind of gets you on the show. But then there's the diligence like, okay, let me really see what the numbers, what's going on. Meeting of the minds. And then ideally your paper, your deal, and you're off to the races so that you can kind of get going. I mean, but to me, everyone has limited bandwidth. So my priority is always to try to get that deal done and then implement 3 impactful changes that I can make that are in my power that change the trajectory of the company, because I don't want to do everything, can't do everything. So I immediately try to identify, okay, what's the fastest way that I can make a difference in the trajectory and also be ready to take advantage of when the show airs. The show airs, you got 4 million people watching it. You want to be ready for that primetime moment. So often for me, what it involves is I have a whole network of people. Heather Harder is on here and comms. I have my guy Sabir, who's a growth hacker and knows e-com and Shopify. There's like a people who descend and try to unlock value and get the company ready for prime time so we could take advantage of the airing, like what we do with Tailgate and Go. Here's a good question from Vic. For those of you who don't know, the difference between smart money and dumb money, can you let everyone know your thoughts on this? I learned it the hard way. That's a great question. Smart money, right, is the money that is informed, sophisticated, and can actually make a difference with you strategically, right? Smart money is somebody could put you in, you know, you do a deal with Damon, by the way, who is incredible at helping getting deals at retailers with his partner, Maury, and they get you everywhere. And Lori, my God, like, right, understands QVC and all these different things. Like, that's what sort of smart money looks like. You know, dumb money is somebody's just writing a check and it kind of comes easy. They don't know what they're talking about. And by the way, those ones end up being really a pain when things don't go right because they don't understand your business and they thought like they signed on for the wrong reason. So that's a great question. Most important point I feel about money and generally and taking investors is when you're doing something unconventional and you're moving your business in a trajectory that's different from the herd, right? You're breaking new ground. You have to make sure that the money that you take in maps to the DNA of what you're doing. So for example, if you're a mission-driven company like N Pizza that wants to have a living wage, you have to make sure you take in money that believes in the power of that mission to both do good, but do well. Because in the early days, when you're trying to break through, you're going to stumble along the way. And if you take the wrong kind of money, that person will be the first one to say, this isn't working. Like, I just want to do what the herd is doing, right? And they'll bullshit you in the beginning to be like, love what you're doing. Yeah, everybody should make a living wage. And as soon as things get tough, they'll compromise. So to me, it's even less about smart and dumb money, but honest money that maps to the DNA of what you're doing. Easier said than done. Everybody makes compromises because now if you have to, make sure you don't have terrible consent rights that are going to tank you when things get tough. Why don't we take, so you can take care of your puppy. Want to take? He's good. Well, let's take 2 more. Heather, do you have any or you want me to? Oh, look at that. It's like magic. You know.
I know. It just appeared.
All right. You want to take this?
Sure. What level stage do you expect a business to be at before going on Shark Tank or asking for investment? For example, have you invested in a company that is not yet mature enough to sustain consistent growth? For Shark Tank, you at least should have a working prototype. If you have just an idea and you haven't actually brought it to concept with something that's tactical that the sharks can actually play with and try out, it's probably too soon. We have had a bunch of companies that are pre-rev, only have a working prototype, don't have any sales, and we still put them on and they end up doing deals. The Comfy is a great example. Comfy? Cozy? Cozy. Cozy. I'm blanking on the name now.
Cozy?
Comfy? God, this is horrible. Anyways, they came in, they pitched, they only had four, there's five sharks on every panel. They only had four prototypes and they ended up doing a deal with Barbara, and I mean, they've blown up and everything. So at least have a working prototype. If you don't have sales, it's okay. You can still apply because some of those companies do get through.
Right. And I think from my perspective, I look for what I call, you know, proxies of traction, proxies of relevancy, right? I want to see traction in some form, whether it's through an analogy, well, there's this phenomenon happening and I fall into this category. That's less direct, that's less impressive. Or, hey, we sold only 10 things at a bake sale and they sold in 10 seconds and now my Instagram blew up. Like, I'm looking for something. So, you know, you want to eliminate the amount of guesses I have to make to tie it all together, right? Like, this thing would need to happen and this thing would need to happen and this thing. If those three things happen, we could be successful. I want there to be only like one thing that needs to happen. And the more things that need to happen for me to believe this will be successful, the worse off. So when you're early stage, you're asking me to go on like on a dream. So you want to make that a little more tight. So it doesn't necessarily have to be revenue, but I look for, you know, proxies or indications of, you know, traction that you're moving along the way. Here's a good one. This is a good question I talk about a lot lately. Like, what's the best way to get the attention of any investor? Never in the history of civilization has the entire planet stopped doing what they were doing and been connected and you have their attention. So this changes every week, what I'm about to say, but just generally speaking, at a time like this, you have the ability to get in front of your target audience, right? You have the ability to communicate. You have the ability to go one-to-one. Never has it been easier to do that. I think there's still a subset of entrepreneurs who are uncomfortable with the audacity of putting themselves out there and saying, my product is great and like, hear me. So my point is you should be making content. If you're going to start a business and it's founder driven, you first got to be comfortable with making content, putting it out there. That doesn't mean being transactional, right? And that's what happens a lot on LinkedIn or elsewhere. Like, people just go right in for the kill. And it's like, no. How about let's talk. Like, use the opportunity to get in front of investors and your constituencies with your message and your product and have faith that that'll convert eventually to something transactional. And I think people don't do that enough. But number one thing has got to be out there and make content. Want to do one more? Let's do one more. Heather, you got one more? Or have we hit all the questions?
Oh, I'm sure we haven't hit all of them.
I don't think we have. Final question. Oh, I thought
that.
Oh. I mean, I'm just going to sit back and just let me get my coffee. Okay.
I think my favorite tweet about Matt is he's one of the nicest sharks, but very smart and just, I don't, something about you watching you with the entrepreneurs is I feel like you connect on a personal level, maybe a little bit more than some of the other sharks. And I find that very admirable about you. And you're also very uplifting and inspiring. And we don't always get that sometimes in the tank. And I just think that you're a very, very positive person and we need more of you.
Oh, thank you. By the way, Annie, I really appreciate you asking. That's a very sweet, like, tender question. And I appreciate it because it gives me a chance to say the following. Like, what I love about Mindy is just how serious she takes this responsibility. Like, I don't know. I think it would be such an injustice if you were cavalier with people's dreams that they had put so much energy to get here. And most cases, it's going to end poorly. 39,850 people are going to be disappointed. And I think you're a good steward and custodian of that dream in the early days. And you've been doing it for a long time, which speaks to what I found generally about being part of the Shark Tank family is, you know, Holly Jacobs and Elise and Clay and Yoon and the folks at ABC and Tiffany and Rob Mills and everybody, they are really just fundamentally decent people who recognize that they have a responsibility and it's not just a TV. I know people say, it's just a TV show. It is a TV show, but it's also a lot more than that. Real money was invested. Real lives were changed. Real dreams were fulfilled. And so there's a responsibility in that, again, not to be like, I guess I'm such a fan too from the early days that there's a mythology around it. But what I love is, as I got to know you and the Shark Tank family, it held true. And I would have been really effing disappointed if that wasn't the case. And like, fundamentally good people trying to do good things with a great show. And that means a lot to me. So, wow, this is so cool. We got to.
No, I will say, like, being part of this show and being part of it since season one, it's been so special to me because I've done a ton of shows and they're all great. But to see the little show that could keep going and become what it's become is so special. And just, again, I work on a bunch of shows. You're looking for crazy personalities or whatever. This one, you're actually helping people. And the thing I tell everyone at open calls or whatever, like, keep applying. It could work out where if you apply for 9 seasons in a row, you may end up on the show. It's all about timing. And kind of just to wrap things up with what you said is, I know how nerve-wracking it is for every single person to put their life on the line, essentially, and show their work to potentially get, you know, criticized or supported or whatnot, because not everyone's going to be on board with it. And so I tell everyone, come in, believe in yourself, do your best, enjoy the process, because it will get more difficult as you go. But we are here to help you. Think of us as a coach. How can we help you get to the next step? And I just want to encourage everyone to not give up, because you guys didn't. I didn't. I wouldn't be where I'm at if I gave up. So I just want everyone to know, like, it'll work out at some point. You just got to keep grinding and hustling and just keep believing in yourself, because at the end of the day, that's really all you got.
I love that. Why don't we end up with that note? Don't give up. Always find a way forward, right? And these are tough times, but everybody just keep communicating, talking to each other, leaning in. Everyone will collectively find a way. I love doing these sessions, and hopefully you found something valuable. And next week, where we're just going to do another office hour session where I just, you know, emote, pontificate, whatever is on your mind. And we'll be posting that a little bit later today. But you are the best. Thank you for being so honest, sharing everything. And have a great weekend. All right?
Oh, Friday. That's right. I forgot. You too.
All right. See, dress down Friday. All right. Bye, Minnie. Bye, everybody. Thank you. Bye.